Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Cattlecast Reader's Roundtable edition. I'm Jessica Trotter, and today Cheryl Lindemann and I are going to just straight up talk books and reading. March. March is reading month.
Yes.
We don't have a theme other than we just have a lot of nice, neat books to share.
Yeah, definitely. A few new ones, a few.
Yeah, yes.
That we missed again from end of last year, a few of mine.
So how's your reading going?
I think it's going really well.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, lots and lots of reading, probably more than the last 2 years. An interesting mix, of course.
Always.
Trying to keep up, you know, with new things is always challenging for me because I'm still trying to finish last year's items that I wanted to do.
I do understand.
And then all the backlist that, you know, from 20 years ago or 10 years ago that I'm trying to fit in. And favorites, we talked about that, going back to your favorite books.
Yes, we have. Yep.
Yeah.
Done a bit of a, trying to go back and pick up titles for one reason or another. Yeah. I've got a book discussion coming up that is an older popular book that I just never read, so I've got to get that read.
Yeah.
And then I've got all the new stuff that I want to read.
Mm-hmm. It's always that push and pull.
It's always the push and pull, and it's always the thing that's the least appropriate for the order that you need them in for whatever reason, for a book discussion, to do a podcast, or just to be timely for a review or something like that.
Right.
But the other one over there looks much more interesting. So
yeah, you know, I've really been dealing with the seasonality. We've talked about that on the podcast before. And there are some things I'm going to read. I actually took a photograph of a bunch of books on the floor and saved it as a file because I will read these by the year end. And I will talk about them here on this podcast. But right now, with spring coming up, I'm not in the mood for that particular intensity or tone of the you know, memoir in particular, that sort of thing.
Right.
So it's like, oh, I just can't read this right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm in a point where I'm looking for lighter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tending more towards romance if I have my choice.
Yeah.
Or funny. Mm-hmm. The heavy. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff going on outside in the world that I'm just looking for lighter at the moment.
Absolutely.
So that's a little harder. But
yeah, for me it's that, and it's the weather and it's just the season and that feeling of being able to sort of lean into, because of everything going on in the world, lean into the beauty that I know is coming and the bulbs coming up in the garden and that sort of thing, and lean away from some of those things that in the fall or winter I'm just like, okay, it's time, you know, to read those things. Mm-hmm. But right now it's a little bit different, which I think is reflected in the books that I'm bringing today. Actually, they're a little departure from what I often talk about on here.
Okay. So, do you want to start with one?
Sure, I will get started. And speaking of a new book, I'm starting with a book that maybe our listeners all have heard of, but maybe not. Chuck Klosterman's The 90s, a book. And on the cover is one of those 1990s clear telephones with the really colorful components. You'll see these. I think this is even in the Babysitter's Club reboot. They have one of these phones that they answer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so this very kind of quintessential 90s looking piece of an artifact really from the past, which really sets the tone for this book, which is a tour, a look back, a reflection, series of cultural criticism essays from Chuck Klosterman, who's written so many works of fiction and nonfiction. Notable, the title that always sticks out for me, a Gen X type title, is Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs.
Right.
How could you ever forget that title? But Chuck Klosterman takes you on this tour. And it's interesting, when I was thinking about this, and how, what to say about it, it's like he got to choose what he wants to focus on, right? And I'm not going to mention everything, because part of the joy of this book is the discovery of each piece. I can say that Zima is in this book, and it's so funny, because I don't know about you, but I forgot about Zima.
Yep.
But when he brings it back, it takes me right back to that time. I'm solidly Generation X, so this book very much resonated with me. But I thought about, you know, I was sort of a young adult in that time, but some people are even, you know, older Gen X people were older, and their experiences are sort of reflected in this too. I think Chuck Klosterman's just a few years older than me. So what he does in this book is just takes you through a series of essays a tour of sorts. I like to call it a tour of the 90s. So there's humor, there's of course tons of nostalgia, but there's also some seriousness to some of the essays too. This would be a great book for a book discussion. Mm. And I think it would be great for not just Generation X, but for a multi-generational group.
Right.
Be great for millennials who are interested in the 90s. They were born in the 90s, perhaps. Even baby boomers to sort of look back to, because they were fully adults during this period. But some of the places that he goes, I will say, of course, Reality Bites, the movie. There is an essay that had me thinking about more about Nirvana than I ever did during the 90s, and like really deeply, thinking about, Smells Like Teen Spirit and the video and that sort of thing. Of course, the presidencies of both George Bush's senior and junior, Bill Clinton, and then the really interesting essays on the effects of the campaigns of Ross Perot and Ralph Nader. Hmm. And I remember those vividly. I voted in one of them. I was old enough to. And the music, of course, of the era, movies, TV shows like Seinfeld and Friends, Quentin Tarantino, and there's even an essay that focuses on Alan Greenspan and Oprah in the same essay, if this gives you a flavor for what this book is about. And of course, the big thing here is this looming change with the internet, the beginnings right. of it and where it's going to take us.
Right.
And he takes this book right up into, he says that the 90s ended on September 11th, 2001. And that's basically where that change went. And it had me just really deeply reflecting on some conversations I have with my daughter, who's 10, about we couldn't just look things up on our phones. You had to go to the library. You had to get something from a book. You had to talk to somebody. It was just to think about how different that was and how different TV was. You turned the channel on and you watched what was on. And that affected ratings and how they would place shows to get ratings, or how they would place shows to get success for maybe a poor running show, just put it after Seinfeld. And all those things. People watched, he said, more Seinfeld than they watched the finale of Game of Thrones. So, that's just very, very interesting and fun and witty. Just a great read.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We were kind of talking a little bit about this and the whole concept of the sort of the cultural essay, he's always interested me. I think I read Sex, Lies, and Cocoa Puff, but I haven't picked up the 90s yet. But it also reminded me of some people like Roxane Gay and some of the other people whose names are escaping me right now. But
yeah,
those types of essays are really interesting in that, yes, they get to pick what they're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But it's really fascinating to hear that point of view and rethink that and to talk about it with people.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because he's so confident, and I
right.
saw when I was preparing for this today, I was just looking at a few articles and someone said, Chuck Klosterman has the 90s all wrong. It's like, then it opens up that door and it's
right.
like, this is his opinion on
right.
it. And it's more just like, wow, that's your spin on that. How interesting. And it just takes you back there. And again, discussion. I think this is just the best book for discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about what are the 2000s? What are
right.
they call them? The aughts? Or,
right.
what are the teens? What is it? And it's easier to look back on the 90s because I was a teen and a young adult in that period. But then I started thinking, gosh, what even happened in the 2000s? It just really takes you on this
right.
thought
right.
tour.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fun.
Okay. Well, how about one from me? So what I wanted to talk about is a mystery. Mysteries are really hot at Kettle. I mean, in all of their forms. And one that really caught my attention this winter is a book called The Maid by Nita Prose. It's really smart, quirky, kind of cozy mystery with a twist. It features a woman named Molly, who is a maid. She knows the irony of that is not lost on her, Molly Maid. But she, yes, exactly. but she is a extremely efficient, impeccable maid for a boutique hotel. and she has friends among her coworkers, but she isn't a truly you know, outgoing personality. She is neurodivergent. She has trouble kind of figuring out what people mean, what faces mean. So that is an issue for her, and that's why her job works actually quite well for her. But she's very literal in how she takes things. But she really loves her job, really wants a career in hotel and hotels and housekeeping. And she is going great at it until the day she finds a body in one of her rooms. Then she starts to begin to understand that there's a lot going on at this hotel that she didn't understand. Ooh. And she is now thoroughly in the middle of it. She is a suspect for murder. She is just on her way to, she's going to have to figure things out because she is the person that police suspect is a problem.
Oh,
so
dear.
It's a great book. It is so twisty. It's neurodivergent lead who's having to figure out a web of deceit, and it's a thrilling ride. It's just a lot of fun.
Wow. Yeah, I'm seeing that book everywhere. That looks really, really good.
Yeah, no, it's twisty, it's fun. She is quite a character. and she finds out kind of who her friends are in the process of all of this. And it becomes a kind of a interesting, cozy crew.
Yeah.
To solve things.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, I have one that I wanted to read last year. I think I even mentioned it, but I hadn't had a chance to read it. And this is Lessons from Plants by Baronda L. Montgomery. And this Baronda L. Montgomery is a foundation professor of biochemistry and molecular biology and microbiology and molecular genetics at MSU.
Oh,
so
cool.
So local author, a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the American Academy of Microbiology. She was named one of Cell's 100 Inspiring Black Scientists in America. And this is an absolutely beautiful book, kind of inside and out. It's just a lovely, lovely book, perfect for March as we're starting to think about gardening. But I think this would be a really good book for not just gardeners. Please don't think of this as just a garden book. This would be a good book for community leaders, nonprofit leaders, teachers, anybody who's involved with community work and working with young people of all ages, but just adults, or someone just looking for inspiration. Because what this book is really about, it's this great mix of kind of science. I mean, it gets pretty dense, but readable and accessible about the science of plants. And then takes each chapter of something from the scientific world of plants and applies that to an individual's lives and the lives of communities and how we can all come together and really build a better world. And she brings you back to thinking about plants. We think of plants as static. Everybody does, unless they're really immersed in you know, a career with plants. These static objects sitting there, right? But and really, they don't have the agency that we have. You know, if we're uncomfortable, we can put on a sweater. We can try to uproot ourselves. They cannot uproot,
right.
But they can do so much, and that's what this plant is about.
Okay.
And they sit and they assess. And they think about, they actually don't think, but they assess their environment and then they make all sorts of changes, whether they be biochemical or they be relationships with other plants, other roots, with the mycorrhizae fungal relationships. They can change and alter the way that they, you know, manage photosynthesis to survive, to pass on to the next generation. And so one of the really compelling pieces of this book that I really liked was talking about, let's say you get a house plant and it's failing, or a garden plant. Most people trying to think about, okay, what can I do different? Am I overwatering? Maybe they'll consult an expert. Maybe they will, you know, call the garden center. Try to figure out what to do. Move it, change the pot, right? But they don't say this is just a faulty plant. But she says, let's take that and think about people. Right? So we have people in different environments. How much is the environment affecting them negatively? And what can we change in people's environments? How can we be leaders to them? How can we be mentors to people to help them adapt better to their environment, maybe change their environment, to have better success as individuals. And these lessons then can be taken out into communities. Right. So it's about cooperation, but just this really, she has this extreme love of plants and appreciation of plants. She quotes Robin Wall Kimmerer from Braiding Sweetgrass. We've talked about that a lot on the show and here. And it's just a wonderful book. Each chapter also has a really nice quote from other authors working in the world of plants. So an excellent book, really, for anyone.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to somewhat jump off the local theme. And that one of the books I wanted to talk about was What the Fireflies Knew by Kai Harris. This is a debut novel by a... Kai Harris is originally from Detroit. But this is a coming-of-age story featuring a girl named KB, who's not quite 11. She's a Detroiter whose world has just been turned upside down. She actually has found her father, who has overdosed. Mm. She's lost her father. The financial burden of his addiction has taken a toll on the family. They've lost their house. And her mother is just trying to find her footing. So kind of to try and figure out how to cope, she asks her estranged father, KB's grandfather, to take KB and her sister for the summer at his home in Lansing, Michigan. Oh. And it's a summer of learning, of trying to find herself. She's a devoted fan of Anne of Green Gables. She used to be really close to her sister, but now she's not, and she's trying to figure out that relationship. She has this grandfather that she's barely met, that she's trying to figure out, and she's trying to kind of connect with her mother who isn't there. So it was a really interesting story, and I think people should check it out.
Yeah.
It has the Detroiter feel almost a little more than the Lansing feel, but it's still a very... it's still a very Michigan story.
Yeah, excellent. Very good. Well, my next book, we did talk about awards last session of podcasts, and this is an award winner that was just announced, but a book from published last year. This is one of the Pen America Award winners. It is the Pen Diamondston Spielvogel Award for the Art of the Essay. And some of the other books that we've talked about were on that as nominees, too. So it's an interesting list to go check out. That's a thing. You know, one person wins, or one author wins, but these lists are just filled with such wonderful.
Yes, definitely.
Abdu Karib's book was, I talked about that, the podcast, it was one of the finalists. This is Graceland at Last, Notes on Hope and Heartache from the American South by Margaret Rankle. I've talked about Margaret Rankle before with her memoir, Late Migrations. But Margaret Rankle is a New York Times opinion columnist with a weekly column, really based around the American South, but going in every direction that you can think of with the South. And this is a compilation of those columns. And it's been edited a little bit to put it in, it was really an essay collection, essentially. And Margaret Rankle, at her heart, loves the South. She's from the South. She's from Alabama, but she moved to Nashville as a young adult, and it's her home. But it's a complicated love. You know, the book is about the love of the South, but also, you know, the pain of living in the South. And what does that mean? And understanding that the South is very complicated, has a very painful and complicated history. And what is happening in the South? What are the movements? So there's politics in here, of course, social movements, but also the music scene. There's a really good several essays talking about music that also hint at real estate in Nashville, how it's gone through the roof and everything's gentrified. Her neighborhood in particular is completely unaffordable, and all the charming mid-century homes are getting taken out. So there's that. Margaret Rankle is really known for her nature writing, her deep love of nature, and to the point of, you know, loving moles, loving critters that people don't love. That was in Late Migrations. And she has a naturalized yard in the middle of the city where she's trying to make a wildlife garden. So there's a lot about that, but about the chemicals and the raising and the taking down of trees. But there's about, you know, culture, arts. So it's really this huge scope. literature. She's in the neighborhood of Parnassus Books, Ann Patchett's bookstore. So there's a little crossover with the Ann Patchett's essay collection there, too. Authors. So just an excellent read about America, about the South, about nature. So Graceland at Last, Margaret Renkel. Highly recommend this one.
Okay. I'm going to finish out really quick. I think my last title would be, it's a high adventure book called Norm by Nnedi Okorafor. It's thought-provoking, high-action book, look at near-future Nigeria. It's about biotechnology, about big corporations with a capital C, and all the negative connotations that brings, and individuals trying to make do with the hands that they've been dealt. AO was malformed in utero and then involved in a freakish accident after that. So she's very heavily, her body is very much being taken over by technology. She has basically a cyborg, basically, appearance and lifestyle. And she stands out. It's usually not such an issue, but one day when she goes to the market, it totally is. And it just starts this road trip in a dystopic future type adventure novel.
Wow.
That just is just one thing after another. And Nnedi Okorafor has such neat ideas, and it's just so such thought-provoking stories that it's just a fast, fabulous ride. And then you're thinking about it for quite a while afterwards.
Yeah.
So one of those kind of sci-fi stories. I think that's what we were going to cover today.
Yeah. Excellent.
A lot of great, very different picks.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of different things to choose from. And
so, okay.
Always a pleasure.
I hope everybody had a great March for reading, and I hope everybody keeps reading.
Yes, keep reading.
See you next time.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.